Welcome to Demand and Desire, the art and science of branding. I'm Jez Frampton, part two of our 2012 special on the future of brands. I'm joined by my esteemed colleague who's actually interviewing me for a change, Karen Burke, our head of global communications, and we are in the New York office talking about what the future holds.
Let's talk about the financial services sector. Everyone is still upset, still blaming the companies about what's happened in the economy. Is that evolving? Is it going away? What can they do? We've got movements going on. What's really happening? Is there a change?
Yeah, I mean, I think it'd be fair to say that pretty much everywhere in the world, the mass market perception is that somehow it's still all the bank's fault. I think the opportunities are to use this as an opportunity to reset people's understanding. There's almost two levels of things that I think can be done, one of which is actually on an industry level, which is that the industry needs to reset our understanding of the capital markets. Why we need them, credit, whilst it was, you know, perhaps not used in the way that it should have been, has actually fueled many people in the world, not just in the Western world, enjoying much better standards of living, and that it actually is a great way to lubricate economies so that entrepreneurs can be entrepreneurial and so that businesses can get the funding that they need to grow. And ultimately, this benefits us all. And there's a story to be told there that I think that the industry needs to consider that as a job that it needs to be doing, and whether that comes from the financial services regulators in various different markets, or whether it's something that comes out of the World Economic Forum, or I'm not sure. But I think there's a tremendous opportunity to kind of rebrand capitalism almost here.
Occupy Wall Street, Occupy Chicago, Seattle. What are your thoughts around that? And as we talk about financial services and what they can go do you think that that group, do you think that consumers are going to allow them to go really try to make their change and change their image?
I think it's one of the most visible reasons why they do need to make change. If you were a bank operating within that environment, it makes you very difficult. I mean, in a lot of companies, particularly when they're dealing with governments, are looking for what you call license to trade. And I think it starts to push on some of those levers, which is that the banks have to tread a very, very difficult line right now between wanting to maintain the motivation of their employees so that they can continue to compete in what is a very, very tough marketplace. And they've also got, you know, a whole load of noise around them now from governments who are posturing, politicians who are posturing, and it's the easy thing to do to bash the banks right now, but they are fundamental to our economies and the structure of capitalism. So, you know, people almost talking out of two sides of their face. So I think they have to acknowledge the fact that, you know, people don't go and sleep in tents outside financial services buildings just because they've got nothing else to do. As a, you know, there's a genuine concern amongst many people about how the banks appear to be responding to some of the charges that have been made about them, and I think their duty is to respond. Now, you know, as we said, whether that is at a category level where the whole industry is really doing something to try and re-communicate how important it is to us, and actually that, you know, bankers do good for us, or whether it's at an individual level, either way, there's a big communications job to do, but it mustn't just be seen as simply, you know, trying to advertise their way out of this problem. There has to be probably some behavioural change that needs to happen too.
Let's talk about the food and beverage sector.
Okay.
There's some interesting things going on in there. We've got Yum Brands is doing some things in the fast developing markets, and then we have some other new and unique things coming out of some bigger brands like McDonald's and Starbucks. What do you think about some of the innovations, some of the work that they've been doing?
I'm personally a big fan of McDonald's. Because I think that they have become a very interesting case study in reacting to changes in tastes and behaviour in consumers. I think, you know, if you spin the clock back 7 years or so, you know, they were the target for the whole fast food industry, or what was called the fast food industry. And I think they reacted so brilliantly, and, you know, they didn't just try and communicate their way out of it. They made fundamental change to their menus, to the way that their core products are cooked, created and served. right the way through to the environments in which we enjoy their products. And I think, you know, things like Matt Cafe out in Asia have really kind of set a new standard for, you know, McDonald's said they wanted to shift from fast food to good food fast. Yes. And I think they've, yes, you know, they've done that really, really well.
Yep.
Because of their sheer size, they are always going to be walking that fine line between being seen as an organisation which is part of the community or one which is, you know, trying to run roughshod over a community. But I think, you know, they've done great things to not just position themselves, but to change themselves. So I think they're a great example.
Yeah.
You know, this whole area really about food, nutrition and health and the way that we look after ourselves and well-being, which really goes to the heart of lifestyle, to be honest. You know, all of these things are symptoms of the fact that we are changing the way that we live. You know, so the reason that quick service restaurants became so popular was because increasingly we kind of eat on the move, and our lives are about movement between different places, as opposed to fixed places of work and home and then the travelling between the two. I mean, our social lives and our business lives are so much more complex now.
Yeah.
So I think I expect that we will see, you know, as Starbucks invented the third place and turned coffee from a commodity into an experience-level product, I'm sure we will continue to see great innovation around the area, just simply because our lifestyles continue to change. You know, I'm waiting for, I mean, let's face it, we all love Chinese food, Japanese food anyway, but I suspect we'll see a lot of innovation coming from that part of the world, because they are now going through huge societal changes about the way that people live their lives, and that will throw up innovation.
That would be exciting to see, very exciting to see, and I love Chinese food. Let's talk about healthcare a little bit. What are some of the trends that you're seeing with healthcare, and what do we think is going to be happening there?
There's been a long time coming and sort of slow moving but unstoppable change in the industry, really, particularly if you look at the ethical pharmaceuticals world, the changing structure of the business, the rise of generic competition, the reduction in the number of big blockbuster drugs. There's a kind of a change in the structure of the industry. Certainly from Interbrand's perspective, we believe that as a result of all of this, brands become ever more important, because it's more difficult to create these big blockbuster individual products which produce huge revenue streams. It becomes much more about managing portfolios. It becomes much more about understanding how to beat generics with brands in key markets. And it becomes much more about understanding how your brands at a corporate level, at a category level, and at an individual product level have to interact in order to generate best value for the organisation. You know, most of us don't buy the GlaxoSmithKline Beecham brand because we are purchasers of the individual products that they make. If you're a hospital or if you're a government, it's an important brand, you know what it is. But I think increasingly the lines will blur.
Right.
There's three things that we look at in brand valuation, one of which is the financial flows. The other two are to do with marketing. One of them is to do with choice, and it's called the role of the brand. And the other one is to do with brand strength, which is really to do with loyalty. Those two things are going to become more and more important in the healthcare space. The other thing, of course, is that a lot of the innovation is happening increasingly around devices and clever diagnosis systems, self-diagnosis systems, things like that. And again, these things are going to need to stand out within markets, and people need to know what they are, and that brings branding.
Could you talk a little bit more about role of brand and brand strength? What exactly are they?
Role of brand, put simply, is the importance of the brand in choice. So if you went and bought a BMW car, for instance, we can put a percentage on the importance of the brand within that choice, and given what it is, obviously it's quite important. If you then went and put it into the world of pharmaceuticals and said that you were going to go and buy a headache pill because you have a headache and you want to take that away, on one hand you could be buying a generic, on the other hand you want people to walk through the door and ask for a brand name like Tylenol. If you own that brand name, understanding how important that brand is in purchase is critical, particularly when you are competing against, can I have the own brand headache tablet, please, which has got exactly the same active ingredient in it. So that's where you really are seeing the difference between buying a product and buying a brand. So that's role of brand, purely about choice. How important is it in choice? Brand strength is really a measure of long-term loyalty, and we have 10 different things that we look at in there, some of which are internal to organisations and some of which are external. And it really helps you to get a measure for how far into the future you're going to get revenue flows and earnings flows from your brand.
Hospitality. I know that we're seeing a couple things going on there. We're seeing a lot of value because of the economy, and we're seeing a lot of desire for personalisation that seems to be playing out from digital.
As you quite rightly say, there's almost like a polarisation going on within the industry. And, you know, on one hand, some of the most amazing luxury experiences are being created. And I think, you know, there's a lot we can learn for what the Asian organisations are doing in this area. They are fantastic at service. At the other extreme, you know, there is tremendous opportunity in the budget sector because people are just using hotels more for short-term stays, going to see some friends, hopping in and out, and it's again to do with changing lifestyles, really. And again, if you're in hospitality, it is about understanding how people live so that you can provide them a home away from home or a stay away from home or whatever it is they might be looking for. And in some instances, you're looking for that ultimate pamper experience. Mm-hmm. And in other instances, you're just looking for somewhere where you can lay your head.
Right.
Places like China are huge opportunities. I think Starwood apparently are opening a new property every 2 weeks.
That's amazing.
China, which is incredible. Absolutely. Like all of us, in every market in which we partake and buy from, we want good value for money. That doesn't necessarily mean being cheap. It means good value. And, you know, there's lots to choose from. It's kind of one of those great markets to operate as far as branding is concerned because, you know, fundamentally it is a place to lay your head.
Right.
So therefore being able to eke out a very clear position and be clearly differentiated is a real test of your branding skills.
Okay, so moving on to the luxury market. It's a market that I know that you enjoy as well.
Yes.
So what are you seeing there? And what are you seeing also with those fast developing markets? If they're slowing down with their growth, where luxury has been making some movement, what do you think is going to happen there?
They have all fared extremely well, actually. A lot of commentators thought that people would shift away from luxury brands towards purely making price decisions. But of course, there's a quality and value decision that goes into buying luxury. I think there's a lot of very, very interesting innovation coming out of the sector as well. In our report on Best Global Brands in 2011, we actually spoke quite a lot about Burberry.
Mm-hmm.
And the team from Burberry came along to our event in New York, and it was fascinating hearing from them about the way that they'd used digital, particularly, mm-hmm. as a means to reinvent their experience. And you know, they didn't have the piles of money when they were trying to rebuild the business that some of their competitors had. So they tried to be clever with it. And what they did was invested heavily in their website and the interactive elements of their stores. And as a result, I think, you know, they've definitely jumped ahead of a lot of their competitors in terms of how they use digital channels, media, interactivity to provide their customers with a more enjoyable in-store experience, but more importantly, to provide them a store experience when they're not in the store.
Mm-hmm.
They look at their website as their biggest flagship store in the world, and you know, they're very careful in the way that they manage their relationships with their customers, so that if you're a close Burberry fan, you get to see stuff almost before it hits the stores.
Mm-hmm.
You have an opportunity to order almost before it hits the stores.
Mm-hmm.
I think they've got very, very good at customer management. And one of the keys to getting it right in luxury is really understanding how people in your sector buy. One of the areas that we're particularly interested in at the moment is what we're calling meta-luxury, and we're just about to bring a book out in this area later in the year. And it really does look at the kind of super-luxury sector. You know, why do people buy Pagani cars? And, you know, what does it mean to have, you know, truly authentic, handcrafted quality? And again, you know, this area is an area where I think, you know, people are increasingly beginning to realise that, you know, that luxury sort of sector badge that's put on everything, mm-hmm. from kind of Tiffany through to Pagani is stretching a lot.
It is.
And there are two or three very distinct areas within it. So if you take a look at somebody like Hermes, for instance, the way that they're marketing, even within their own offer, you know, they have bespoke work that they do directly with you. You know, if you have the resources, shall we say,
mm-hmm.
you can get Hermes to come in and do specific things for you in your home or wherever it might be. That's a very different kind of service model and the way that you provide to those kinds of customers to people who want to come into your store and buy a silk scarf.
Right. Do you think we can get them to come in and do my office?
You can ask them, Karen.
Okay, if we talk about media and what's happening in media, what are some of your opinions on the drivers of both the consumers and the companies, because they seem to be a little bit at odds, right?
You know, it's almost impossible to predict what the world will look like. Everyone's been predicting the death of television for years, and it refuses to go down. And indeed, you know, there's indications that viewing figures are increasing. I think people are changing the way they consume media, and you know, it's all about content now and the ability to generate exciting, interesting and desirable content, and then more to the point, to be able to actually monetize it in some way. So, you know, we're going through all the legal cases right now where the new acts are being talked about in the US, which are, you know, some believe are going to reduce the amount of freedom on the internet. The other way of looking at it is that perhaps they will protect intellectual property, which at the heart of it, all content, be it a music track or a movie or a news segment, is intellectual property.
Absolutely.
And people should have the right to earn economically from that. The pressure that puts on brands is interesting, of course, because then it becomes about understanding how your brand works in the context of content, as opposed to the context of channels. And those two things, I think, are going to become quite distinct. You know, on one hand, you may be a news provider that provides a channel, but increasingly, you know, you're going to have to think about the fact that you're also creating content, and how might that be used and shared with other partners and exploited in different ways.
What do you think about the recent IPO with Facebook? I had to bring that up.
They're still exploring how they best straddle that fine line between looking after my personal information and my personal contacts with my personal friends, and combining that with the desire to give me information and opportunity with commercial offers. And I think that's going to be something that they're going to continue to have to explore. And I think, you know, despite the fact that they're an easy target for journalists and others to say that, you know, they've crossed the line, I think the point is that we don't know where the line is until they're crossing it. And you've got to remember that all the time while they're doing that, they're dealing with cultural change at the same time as product and technology change. So our attitudes towards the sharing of information and private data about our lives have changed almost beyond recognition from, you know, 20, 30 years ago, where the whole idea of sharing some of your, you know, family secrets, like where you went on vacation, were things that you reserved for only the very closest people you know. But nowadays it's quite acceptable for people to share a lot. So I think, you know, people should give a little bit more credit to the team at Facebook, because they are helping us to explore our cultural, shall we say, parameters, as well as the parameters of their business. I'm sure the IPO will be fantastic, and it will steal the news for the next 6 months.
Yes, it will. Looking at retail, when it comes to retail, that people no longer distinguish between the physical and the virtual channels and the virtual worlds.
Yeah.
And how is that going to play out? What's going to happen to the retail stores? What is happening? Are they still going to be around?
I think that the retail industry is going through something of the, shall we say, the effect on the automotive industry of 2008-2009. Companies are going under in every corner of the world, you know, and a lot of them are being chewed up by internet-based businesses. But for every collapse, there is an interesting story about how people are innovating, and of course the most famous one is Apple. You know, so at the same time when everyone's talking about the demise of retail, and out the other side of their face, they're talking about, you know, the incredible effect of Apple's retailing strategy and the Apple stores on the way that we buy. I mean, they added a zero to virtually every theoretical benchmark in retailing, and have really shown us how, when you tie things together brilliantly, seamlessly, between the online experience, the offline experience, the integration between those two, it's not just about the shopping experience, it's about the pre-shopping experience and the post-shopping experience as well. And as far as Apple's concerned, it's about ownership. It's about your relationship with that brand from the moment you start thinking about you might buy one, you know, but to, you know, I'm sure as far as they're concerned, I'm going to continue buying them for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And if they continue to deliver the kinds of service and the interaction and the integration, it's probably true.
So let's talk about telecommunications. What's going on in telecommunications? And there seems to be so much, seems to be some battling of the brands.
Uh-huh.
What's going to happen?
The big, you know, everyone talked about convergence, which is, of course, the coming together of content, of channel, mm-hmm. of the way in which you interact, the development of apps, the changing nature of the actual handsets themselves. Now, there's also a massive convergence in terms of brands as well.
Mm.
So whereas at one point, you know, really the two brands that you dealt with was to do with the carrier,
right.
and to do with the handset manufacturer,
right.
and you had a billing relationship with the carrier and the handset manufacturer you held.
Right.
You know, now increasingly, you know, the software, the apps that you use, the ability to control your data, all of these things are as if not more important, you know. So if you use an iPad, there's a brand in itself, but the actual apps that you use on there, you know, and the ability to experience very, very rich experiences from brands that might have just been seen as newspapers a little while ago, and all of a sudden they're more like a cross between, you know, the television and a newspaper,
right.
and something else.
Right.
The opportunities for telecoms are enormous. I think the big question for the telco industry, the operators particularly, is where do they play within that increasingly complex set of brands? You know, so on one hand, I've got you know, my handset,
right.
I've got my telco,
right.
I've got my apps, I've got my favourite search engine,
right.
I've got, you know, all of these things,
right.
that are coming together, and increasingly, you know, it's going to be stuff from my life, my home, my car, whatever. It's all converging into this little remote control for my life.
Right.
You can say that it becomes more and more difficult for people to stand out and stand for something. I think one of the great opportunities actually is for the operators. You know, they do play an important part in our lives. They are the means by which we are connected.
Yeah.
And, you know, they also have large retail estates. They have a billing relationship with me still.
Mm-hmm.
There is tremendous opportunity in their brands. The way that we look at brands is we call them living business assets. And the other key way that we look at it from a creative perspective is we have something called our creative manifesto, and we believe that brands have the power to change the world.
Right.
And the underlying principles of that is that it has to be needs-based, it has
right.
to be evolving, brands live and they evolve. And I think, you know, a lot of the operators could learn from things like that. AT&T actually is a great example of a company which has been through incredible change over the last...
Mm.
5 to 10 years, and have, you know, continually evolved. The merger with Singular brought them some of those consumer credentials, which actually helped to, you know, shall we say, give the brand more of a heart. They've done things on the inside of their organisation, which have enabled their people a channel for innovation. And they've done things on the outside of the organisation with their retail experience and their customer service experience, which is, you know, which is moving them in the right direction to be a preferred brand and a preferred supplier in that market. When you start to look at the blurring between the way that we consume content through television, through mobile handsets or devices, and indeed the way that we work,
mm-hmm.
you know, they potentially could become ever more important to the way that we live our lives. I think one of the opportunities for all of them actually is to, you know, really look carefully at the customer segments that they have and make sure that the services that they're providing are the best possible for the needs of those individual segments.
Sounds like smart advice.
Thank you very much. Well, it's been a real pleasure talking, and I feel like I'm almost back on the other side of the table now, Karen. And trying to make predictions about what might happen is one of those things where you stick your neck out. I think, without question, 2012 is going to be an interesting year in terms of the economy. We have an Olympics happening in my home city of London this year, which I'm sure is going to be fantastic. One thing is absolutely for sure, it's going to be a fun year, I'm sure.
It is. It will be very fun.
It doesn't matter whether you're talking to a banker, a car guy, somebody who runs a large retail organization. What might happen next is key to the success and failure of any company. The real opportunity by, shall we say, future gazing is to play out potential scenarios, to understand how your brand, your business might fare against your competitors, the kinds of things that are happening within the heads of your consumers, and indeed what might be going on within your own company. Those three dynamics are the three dynamics by which any business survives and falls. It's certainly true that virtually every market, every sector is being affected by the way that we as consumers and people are changing our behaviour, largely driven by technology and our ability to connect with one another in ways that were seemingly impossible, maybe even only 4 or 5 years ago. These have huge dynamic effects on the way that people choose products and brands, the way that they evaluate them, and the way that they think about what they might do next. So understanding how people's behaviour is changing is certainly key to understanding how your business might change in the future. Understanding what your capabilities and what your competitors' capabilities are undoubtedly massive drivers as to your potential success. Some sectors move faster than others at different times. Automotive, we've mentioned huge changes there. Retail is an area which we believe is going to see significant change over the coming years. Some of the areas around travel, around leisure time, and indeed the way that we actually interact with one another. Again, you know, more big changes coming for the telecommunications industry, for instance, and technology. It really doesn't seem to matter where you look. And it's our job as an advisor and a consultant to make sure that we help our clients stay ahead. I hope our glimpse into the future has stimulated you in some way. We hope you enjoyed listening. This was Demand and Desire. I am Jez Frampton, Global Chief Executive of Interbrand, and I look forward to speaking with you again very soon.